Hello, and welcome to my podcast. This is an audio version of my videos, available to make listening to my stuff in the background easier than YouTube makes it. But since my videos are primarily made for YouTube, there may be occasional references to visual materials. If you'd like this podcast ad-free, you can join us on Patreon at patreon.com/vicerhino. Please enjoy. Hello, and welcome to my channel. Vice Rhino here. Today, I'm looking at a video of a podcast by Greg Kokel. After all, last time I covered a podcast, I went to all the trouble of learning how to make a picture of a guy bounce along with his audio, so I figured I'd better put that newfound skill to use for more than just the one project. So today, we get a bouncy Kokel! That sounds like a sex position.
Is free will, is it reasonable or fair if God knows that somebody's going to be in a circumstance that those circumstances will not incline them towards the gospel?
I'm curious how Greg is going to reconcile this, but no, it is not fair for God to put people into situations that he knows will result in them either not knowing or not accepting the gospel, and then to punish them for all eternity for being in the circumstances that he put them in. And let's be real here. This is a problem that is a direct result of all of the properties that Christians typically assign to God. He is all-knowing, he's all-powerful, and he is the creator of all things. If all of these are simultaneously true, then God is directly responsible for everything that happens. Everything, even your individual choices, thereby negating any claim to free will. This is because that God knew, before creating anything, what all of the downstream consequences of his creative actions would be. He knew what choice someone with your genetics and your experiences in your situation would make before he made your genetics in a situation that would provide you with your experiences leading up to that particular situation. So every creative action that God performs will cause all of the downstream consequences of that action, and God, being omniscient, knows all of these downstream consequences, and so by choosing to perform that particular creative action in that particular way, he is therefore choosing those particular downstream consequences. So if you want free will to be a thing, then God needs to have limits. Either he isn't responsible for everything having been created the way it was created, or he doesn't know all of the consequences of his creative actions, or some things are just outside of his control. But you can't have him in control of everything while knowing everything and being the creator of everything and still have free will. So, given the attributes that Christians assign to God, every person who ends up in hell is there because God decided that that is where he wanted them to go.
Is it fair for them?
No.
And this is something that different people, I mentioned, satisfy or solve in different ways.
And the Calvinist way is the way that makes the most sense, which is essentially that God has preordained who goes to heaven and who goes to hell. Though that certainly doesn't square well with the general picture that is presented of God as being a God of love.
Now, there is a verse in Acts. And I don't have it right in front of me here, but you might be familiar with it. I think it's when Paul's in Athens and where he – maybe on the Areopagus, where he says that God has placed people in the world in such a way as they will have the best opportunity to know God.
Acts 17 is what I think he's talking about here. That's where Paul gets up and mentions that in Athens he saw an altar dedicated to an unknown god, which Paul then goes on to claim is the Christian god. Specifically, I think he's referring to verses 26 and 27. And he made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined allotted periods and the boundaries of their dwelling place, that they should seek God and perhaps feel their way toward him and find him. Yet he is actually not far from each one of us. There's a bit of interpretive wiggle room here, but sure, I'll agree that the correct interpretation is that God has placed everyone in the situation where they are most likely to receive and respond to the gospel message. And since we determined earlier that every outcome is directly determined by God in advance, this means that every single person who has ever lived, at least in the last 2,000 years, has been saved and gone to heaven. Because if the receiving and accepting of the gospel message is the desired outcome that God is aiming for, and God really is all-powerful, then he should be batting 1,000 when it comes to putting people in situations where they will end up accepting the gospel. But then, that would mean that Jesus was wrong when he basically said flat out that more people are going to end up in hell than in heaven.
If they would seek and find him, though he's not far from them.
Oh, the almighty if.
If is good.
Yeah, he put everyone in the perfect position to come to a saving knowledge of God, if they seek him. But again, since God knew in advance what choices you would make in which circumstances, he could easily have put you in circumstances that would remove the if from the equation.
Okay, so what that suggests is God is concerned with people knowing him and maximizing the circumstances in which that's the case, that they would know him.
And how is it possible for an all-knowing and all-powerful being to make an effort to maximize a certain outcome without also guaranteeing that outcome? It's only possible for it to not be a guaranteed outcome if God is limited.
However, there is also this other factor, and that other factor is there are people who, no matter what circumstances they're going to be in, are not going to respond to the gospel.
So why did God make those people in that way? Why did he choose to make them at all? Doesn't Psalm 139 say that God made me in my mother's womb? Did God not have a choice but to make me? Could he have chosen not to? Could he not have chosen a different combination of genetic material that would lead to an acceptance of the gospel, or just choose not to make the baby whose choices would lead them away from the gospel? Did he not know that I would reject the gospel when he made me? Or is the Bible wrong when it says that God knitted me together in my mother's womb?
And if they respond, if they reject the gospel, they do so, or they reject whatever knowledge of God is apparent to them. And in Romans 1, that part of the argument there is that everybody has the knowledge of the Father, even though not everybody has the knowledge of the Son.
That sounds pretty similar to Saitem Bergenkate's line about how everyone has just enough knowledge of God to condemn them, but not quite enough to save them. Which, given that God is the one deciding how much innate knowledge people have of him, seems like more than a bit of a dick move on his part.
And if they reject that, they are culpable.
Okay, so are you one of the people who believe that everyone who's not exposed to the gospel message goes to heaven and hell is reserved only for those who are exposed to it and reject it? Because if that's the case, then being a missionary or evangelist is one of the least moral professions you could possibly choose, because people would be safe in their ignorance, but should they not believe your completely unevidenced claim of a dead guy coming back to life 2,000 years ago, now they get to go to eternal torture after they die.
They are without excuse. And the grounds for the judgment ultimately is going to be their immoral behavior.
Well, I should be fine then, since I have behaved way more morally than God has. So if I can be a more moral person than the judge who decides where I go based on my morality, then that judge can't possibly be justified in finding me guilty, right?
And we see that in Revelation 20.
I'm not sure you want to be bringing people's attention to the book of Revelation. There's some really trippy shit in there that makes it rather obvious that it's the result of the author being on mushrooms or something. Like Swordmouth Jesus, who is supposed to use the sword sticking out of his mouth to conquer the nations. A picture that is so ridiculous that artists throughout history have not been able to decide whether the hilt or the blade of the sword should be in Jesus' mouth. In chapter 4, we see that God likes to surround himself with eyeball monsters who constantly talk about how awesome he is without ceasing. And right before the eyeball monsters, we get a verse that talks about the seven spirits of God. So not sure how you can fit seven spirits into the Trinity, but hey, when 1 + 1 + 1 = 1, what's another 4? And of course, when talking about all the weird stuff that you can find in Revelation, I would be remiss if I neglected to mention the scorpion horse locust with human faces, lady hair, and golden crowns, whose sting will cause you intense pain for 5 months, so much so that you will wish you were dead, but also apparently the sting makes you immune to death. But yeah, after the dragon fight where God wins and imprisons Satan for 1,000 years, he'll then release Satan to allow him to deceive the nations, and after he's defeated again, and this time thrown into the lake of fire forever, then God will judge the dead.
and they were each judged according to their deeds.
This is actually an interesting passage, because you can see the influence of Greek mythology on the author. If you die at sea, then you stay dead at sea, and if you don't, you end up in either Death or Hades, who are personified in a way that allows them to be cast into the Lake of Fire. How do you cast a concept like death into the Lake of Fire? The author of this book seems to have had some polytheistic leanings. And, of course, let's not forget the four horsemen of the apocalypse, one of which is this death guy who just got thrown into the lake of fire, and he had Hades following him around. And still, while we're in Revelation, it does bear mentioning that the Hebrew gematria, that is their numerological system, the 666 number of the beast, could have very well been a code used by early Christians to talk smack about the Emperor of Rome, specifically Nero. And that is actually quite plausible, because not only does Nero in Hebrew add up to 666 in their gematria, but in some manuscripts, the 666 is actually 616, which fits with the Latinized version of Nero's name and title. So if Nero were the Antichrist, like this suggests, then that means that the judgment would have happened sometime in the 11th century.
So I guess to answer, to sum up real quickly here, and then you can come back at me in the last couple of minutes, is that it does. God is concerned.
How can God be concerned? The emotion of concern is based entirely on uncertainty about the future. Is God uncertain about the future? That would certainly alleviate a lot of the problems here, but I don't think most people would be willing to make that concession.
He does, to some degree, adjust the circumstances so people have the best opportunity to get the revelation they need. That's the Acts passage, Areopagus.
So he can adjust the circumstances to give people a better chance, but for whatever reason, he can't adjust the circumstances just a little bit more to guarantee that these people will be convinced? What's the limiting factor on which circumstances God can and cannot adjust? I mean, I can already hear the free will objections. If he puts you in a position where you're guaranteed to make a particular choice, then that removes your free will. So he just gives you the choice and then it's up to you. But that just runs us right back into the problem of him knowing in advance which decisions you will make in every situation, and still choosing to make people who will decide not to accept the gospel in any situation. The fact that he knows all your choices when he chooses to make you means that by making you, he has decided that those will be your choices. Even if you can somehow wrap your brain around that scenario being compatible with free will, God has still decided that those are the choices that will be made, and so every time he makes a person, he is choosing to make someone who either will or will not freely accept the gospel message.
But at the same time, people still are going to rebel and still not trust him.
Yeah, you know what? If someone proved with 100% certainty that the God of the Bible existed, you're right, I wouldn't trust him. He sends lying spirits. He allows Satan to deceive entire nations in the end times for no apparent reason. He kills on a whim. He is petty and fickle. He is not trustworthy by any stretch of the imagination.
And for regardless of the level of revelation about Jesus, their rebellion is still blameworthy.
And now we just circle back around to, you know enough about God to condemn you, but not enough to save you. Great.
And so when God punishes the unjust, I'm sorry, when he punishes the unrighteous, he is not unjust, even if no message of salvation has been given to them, because God doesn't owe guilty people a pardon.
Ugh, so God makes you guilty from birth and might choose to never reveal the gospel message to you at any point in your life, and will still send you to hell to be tortured for an eternity for the crime of not believing the message that you never heard, and that's morally okay with you because God doesn't owe you forgiveness for being the way that he made you? Yeah, this God guy sounds like more than a bit of a jerk. That's it for this one. Today's comment of the day comes to us from Mr. Sensible Time-Wasting Arrogant Tosser, who says, "Never heard of Pure Licks. Thanks for the heads up. Now they have another subscriber." Couple things here. First, Pure Licks sounds like a porn site involving lesbian sex parodies of various Pure Flix movies, and I would absolutely throw my money at any company that started doing that. That sounds amazing. Second, I know you meant pure flicks and are trying to get me riled up at the idea that I sent business to a Christian organization, but considering the number of ads that they've purchased on my channel, I can pretty much guarantee that I have gotten more money out of them than they have out of me. So go ahead and enjoy the Too Bland for the Hallmark Channel offerings that can be found on PureFlix. Thanks for watching. Special thanks as always to my patrons, Mark McManus, Mark Hetchum, Clint Cheesewood, Lynn Dobbs, What Jesus, and all the rest, who are the predetermined choices that contradict the free will that is my channel. If you'd like to be completely controlled by God, but also somehow not God's fault, you can join us on Patreon for as little as a dollar per week over at patreon.com/vicerhino. If you feel so inclined, you can also support the channel through direct donation or my Amazon wishlist, which are linked in the description. If you'd like to listen to my videos in podcast form or listen to my podcast with my daughter, the links for those are also in the description, as well as links to my social media accounts and my P.O. Box address. See you next time!